Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of brainhackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of brainhackers.com and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, brain hackers. This is Dave Farrow here with another Brains Behind It. I'm talking to David Hua. He is CEO and co-founder of Meadow, and we're going to be talking about pot today. How you doing, brother?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me.
All right. So right off the bat, tell us about Meadow, as in like going for a nice walk on the grass. So good branding there. You nailed it on that. But talk about Meadow. What makes it different? What are you doing right now in the field?
Sure. Meadow's based in San Francisco, California. It's pretty much the start of the medical cannabis movement. We build technology for this industry. So we started with building tech for delivery services, and now we build tech for dispensaries, brick and mortar. So we handle their compliance, their operations. We help patients get recommendations through a consultation with a doctor. And essentially, wherever there's pain and we can solve it, we're there doing that with tech.
So when you say tech, are you talking about mostly web-based solutions to problems, onboarding patients, controlling, like you said, compliance and things like that? Or are you talking about physical tech, processing credit cards or something like that?
I would love to process credit cards, but unfortunately, the cannabis industry
is not
valid.
When you say tech, you mean mostly like web-based software applications,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
So more web-based software, but also... we build iOS apps for in-store where they do point of sale.
Nice.
So kind of like a Square type of program.
Oh, so you can do some sort of electronic payment. It's not just all a cash.
Well, we can't do the payment, but we actually keep track of the payment.
Oh, okay.
One day.
So it's accounting software. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think one of the dumbest things was how the banks were really blocked from providing banking services for this industry. It made for like a wild west. You've got all these places that have such high cash reserves.
Yeah.
That I heard of horrible stories of how they're being like raided and people like trying to steal from them and stuff. And it's just insane and very dangerous. And if you're trying to make the argument that pot is dangerous, why would you make it more dangerous by having a pot dispensary with, you know,
tons of cash
on board? Like what you just, just inviting Bonnie and Clyde to come by. It's crazy.
Especially when you're taking that money and you're going to pay your taxes. You literally have a duffel bag full of cannabis that you're bringing to the, you know, and they know that they have to go there every quarter. So people are just watching who's coming in and out. If they find people leaving a dispensary, it's just, there's a lot of things that aren't.
I think it's safe to say that I've never found an individual that is as irresponsible as the government is. And more often than not, this was an incredibly irresponsible, you know, if you're going to legalize it, make sure you protect people, have banking.
Yeah. And have banking.
Yeah.
It's a huge problem.
It's just absolutely insane. And I would think that the government is leaving itself wide open to a lawsuit if anybody gets killed or whatever. People have been killed actually, unfortunately in raids. So anyway, so we were getting into this and you know, one of the funny things we talked about before this, I'm a really big believer in how you can't stop market forces. You know, I was just talking to a friend of mine, actually. He's from Singapore. He works for me, Zach Lim. People know him. We were talking about Vietnam, and we were talking about how a lot of people in Vietnam, families in Vietnam, work for the triads or they work for the communist government, you know? And it's kind of funny, you know, from the outside, we think, you know, triads or whatever, you think like organized crime, but really it's you can't stop market forces. If people need a service, they will find a way to buy it. Communism, socialism is impossible. It's basically just market forces are going to happen. It's a matter of whether or not you are going to make it illegal or legal. You know, it's going to have like prohibition and you know, prohibition of alcohol.
Was doesn't work.
Example. Well, you know, like during prohibition of alcohol, you know, the major mob bosses of those days, the Al Capones and everybody, Lucky Lucianos, all these guys, when you factor for inflation, they had sometimes in their own private networks wealth that was greater than the state of all of California, the entire budget of California at one time. You know, the people
running alcohol
through California had more wealth and money than the entire state of California. Makes you wonder how they were able to buy everybody off because they had more money. And so we were talking about this, and we were talking about how it applied to cannabis, and we were saying how much more potent the pot is today than in the past. And you had a really good explanation for that that I never heard of. Tell me what you were saying.
You know, what's really interesting, because it's been driven underground or, you know, indoor, a lot of farmers have, taken approaches to breeding cannabis to increase potency. And so
over decades, like we're talking like through the 80s.
And yeah.
When people talk about the pot they smoked in the 70s is not nearly as potent as it is today.
Oh, they're yeah. That,
like during the 80s, people did grow ops in houses. So they had literally square footage. Each individual inch was worth it.
Exactly. And, you know, the best breeders that I see are kind of, you know, people that, look at like horse breeding, right? Mm. Where you have your studs and you have the people that like win these cups. And those are the mothers that you end up wanting to use for breeding because they have the most exceptional smell or nose, or they have the most, you know, structure or do really well when you're extracting. These are all the things that have been happening in California and a lot of indoor grows. That we've been, you know, lucky enough to visit.
And you know, it's really interesting because by trying to destroy a drug, they made it more powerful. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It reminds me of a story. I'm working on a video for this about how branding, we all know about branding. It's absolutely essential. It's the cornerstone of capitalism, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize it was invented by communists. The very first real effort at branding was in the Lenin era. And there's actually letters from after a communist collapse, there's letters from GE and a few major corporations in America thanking certain communist leaders who were trying to make a buck by defecting to talk about how communism was sold to the people. You think about branding, you branded it for the farmers. They're always going to have crops. The workers are always going to have jobs. You know, the people will always be strong. The soldiers will always have a job. This was a branding effort. And you put that same hammer and sickle on every product from soap to whatever. It's no different from how Pepsi does things today. So I always found that fascinating that in trying to destroy capitalism, communism ended up giving its greatest tool.
That's crazy. And when you think about it, cannabis doesn't have any branding associated, really, right? A lot of farmers, when they were growing, were selling it, you know, it's not from me, or
as we go now, it will.
Yeah, exactly. Now it will.
Scientists coming in and going, this is our brand, and you're gonna have, I think a really big thing will be intellectual property for cannabis. Formulas, recipes, grow. People are going to try to trademark and or patent certain processes.
Yeah, different packaging.
And they're going to try to own it and everything. Yeah, it's going to be crazy. That's going to be absolutely fascinating for an industry. Okay, so we could talk about cannabis as an industry forever, but we want to talk about brains here. And, you know, this is your brain on drugs. I want to talk about your brain. do you think differently because you're an entrepreneur? You know, like most people are told, you know, they go to school, they get a job, they build their resume, that sort of thing. You go into corporate America, you know, you not only are an entrepreneur, but you're going into rather a taboo industry. And even if it wasn't taboo, you're pioneering it. You're one of the first, the first responders, to the industry, which is a very precarious place to be. Do you think your brain works differently than maybe somebody else you went to college with or somebody you grew up with because of that?
Absolutely.
Risk taker, when, how so?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, my brain definitely works differently when I'm on cannabis, right? Right.
I walked right into that one. Yeah.
Start with that. And I think because of it, my mind's, you know, way more open and you can see different perspective.
The number one thing I always hear is you know, risk, taking risks. So you're taking a big risk here. Do you think your brain, an entrepreneur's brain, is different? And if so, how can we use that to an advantage? If somebody does think this way, what advice would you have for them?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, an entrepreneur's brain usually is risk, but there's also reward, right? Or the opportunity. And I think when I look at cannabis, because it's affected me so personally, it just, you intrinsically know it's good, right? You intrinsically know it's that something that you want to work on.
Well, how does it affect you personally? Did you, I don't know your background. Did you have a medical condition that it affected?
Well, you know, so I've been smoking and consuming since high school. But more recently, when I came to California, because I've been at the computer and everything for a while, it was more for chronic pain in my neck and my shoulders. And cannabis was really helpful in relieving that. But I was also working at a health company for a while where I was managing different communities across Alzheimer's, rheumatoid arthritis, migraines, you know, PTSD, IBD, IBS. And as I was looking at cannabis and studying the research, you could see that it was a huge help to these people, these patients. You know, the biggest crisis that I think we're facing right now that's a huge opportunity is the opioid epidemic that's just sweeping the country. You know, last year we had 62,000 overdose deaths, and opioids are something that's highly addictive. Whereas with cannabis, you can actually help reduce the amount of deaths that are happening while people aren't using opioids and using this. So, you know, for people that are entrepreneurs that are looking at getting into the cannabis industry, I think it's about seeing the world as a day, but seeing where it can be, and then, you know, trying to meet that with your efforts and, you know, your energy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, and I got to say personally, I know how you feel. I literally feel your pain. I dealt with chronic pain when I was a teenager. I was in the unfortunate position of having to go to high school even sometimes with a cane because of a chronic reoccurring back injury, which has its drawbacks and its benefits. So the drawbacks are that you know, you're a teenager, so they make fun of you. But the benefits, they make fun of you over there because you got a cane you can swing at them. So,
oh, is that right? That's the benefit.
That's the benefit. So
I thought you get like better food, or
you can't, like, no. You gotta have a sense of humor, especially with chronic pain. And you know, it's really interesting that you have that. So you've got a soul in this, and you've got a real vested interest personally in this. But also, you know, we're talking about brains. Cannabis affects your brain. You've been smoking regularly, chronically, I should say, for years, probably. We're talking at least five.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would say it's definitely picked up.
You're a computer programmer. You're a brainiac, right? You're a guy who does, you know, code and engineering and everything. So have you found that to be an advantage, a disadvantage?
I would say my co-founders are more on the coding side. I would say for me, I'm more on like the business operations and marketing sales side. But what I find that when I'm on cannabis, it's more energizing for me, depending on what I'm smoking. So it helps me, you know, what ends up happening, you have a stream of consciousness, this flow that just like, you know, starts coming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes they're good ideas. A lot of time they're bad ideas.
Well, that's the nature of brainstorming. You know, that's interesting because it seems like everybody does seem to react to cannabis differently. And we know now at least that a lot of the, you know, quote unquote research that was done in the past was just BS. It was just an attempt to manipulate people or propaganda to be scared about cannabis. That has nothing to do with the real science. As we actually dig into the real science, we find that it affects different people differently. Some people do get very mentally active, like you said.
Yep.
They physically sit there, and there's some geniuses in literature and arts that do that. There's other people that become more physical about it. And you know, I think there's going to be some real breakthroughs and studies on how this affects, you know, different people, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I can, you know, because I've consumed as much as I have a pretty good idea on leveraging different strains for different activities or things I'm looking to do. You know, so if I want to clean my house, I'll go and, you know, take some Red Congo. If I want more like pain relief, I'll take some more CBD without the psychoactive effects. If I'm looking for something that's way more chill, happy with friends, I'll smoke an OG and then, you know, help, get some munchies afterwards.
Yeah.
Or if I'm looking for something that's more appetite suppressant, I can go with another strain.
Okay. So I want to talk about marketing, but I want to talk a bit more about pot because it's interesting and it applies here. And we talk about the brain a lot. Different people do react differently. The actual, you know, high, the THC never really did a lot for me. I'd much rather have like a double whiskey, you know, and relax personally. But CBD made a big difference to me. And I also found that cannabis in general it really affected my inflammation levels. And it's actually a very well-known anti-inflammatory.
So, absolutely.
I have an immune thing. I have vitiligo. I'm not ashamed of it. My immune system attacks my melanin if I, the Michael Jackson disease, but you know, made him white, so to speak, white, right? Or albino. I also have psoriasis. You can't see it, but I do have it. And I have inflammation of the joints, a lower back injury, that sort of thing. And I found that it made a huge difference with that. But I didn't really crave it, you know? So I'm wondering, you know, as time goes on, what is the future of cannabis? Is it that everybody has something and it is medicinal for everybody? Or is it going to be, is it going to be more like alcohol where it's more recreational? What is the real boom in it? Because I know the medical aspect allowed it to get legalized because there are, you know, cancer patients and things like that. But let's be honest, that's a small percentage of cannabis users. Where do you see the future growth for this, or is it too soon to tell?
No, I mean, I think that there's a myriad of applications, right? Like, you know, for you specifically, you know, you just ran off like three different conditions where it affects thousands of people.
Yeah.
Right. And when you aggregate all these different conditions together, cannabis becomes this miracle medicine, right?
Yeah.
Like the fact that someone that has migraines that's affected them for years, that can take a tincture that's not really taking, like, you know, smoking, and all of a sudden the migraines are gone is huge. Or someone that has irritable bowel syndrome that's just like, whoa, I now have confidence I can go out and not have to be anxious about finding a toilet, right? But I think that the biggest thing that we're going to see, and, you know, I mentioned the opioid crisis, but I do think there's a lot of mental wellness issues that we're having. Anxiety, depression. I mean, the U.S. is still one of the more unsatisfied, unhappy countries in the world, even though we have so much. Whereas you look at a country
I would say actually we are unsatisfied because we have so much. That is, it's the paradox of prosperity. Most prosperous. Talk to somebody who's very wealthy and they're you know, happiness can be a struggle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk to somebody who's Buddhist who has nothing, they're blissfully happy. So that's the nature of humanity.
And I think the plant can really help bring other sides and other perspectives into people that'll help them with gratitude, that'll help them with compassion, that'll help them, you know, see the world a little bit differently than the anxiety, the bombardment of things that are coming through. So, you know, what I love about it is because it's non-addictive, right? Like I'm going through Sober October right now. So I haven't, you know, consumed in the last few weeks, but, you know, I do it every year for the last 4 years and, you know, I'm not craving it, even though
the only people that it seems to be addictive for are people with chronic conditions like anxiety or something. And that's where they go to for it. And, you know, all the different things, even that I rhymed off, you could say there's other drugs for it, but I got to tell you, man, if I'm going to take an anti-inflammatory, we're talking, I got it right here. That's how often I big bottle of Advil here. If I take four of these at one time, I'm really taxing my liver, right?
Yep, exactly.
With cannabis, it's not. And it's cannabis is a much more potent anti-inflammatory without the side effects. Like that's just
exactly
an example of many. But I want to kind of get down to really what I have a theory about cannabis when it comes to do with the brain. A lot of what we consider the biggest crises today are creations of humanity. They're creations of the modern world. So we're talking about anxiety and depression, even ADHD, and a lot of things. There's a lot of conditions that are actually outgrowths of our high sugar diet, low fat diet, things like that. The brain is really good at being a hunter-gatherer, at having very little stimulation, not having widescreen 3D movies blaring at you and Facebook and Twitter and all these different distractions. These are essentially what you're talking about: stress, depression, anxiety, all these things. These are the ailments of the modern human, not the natural state of humanity. So could it be that you know, people talk about pot being so natural? Could it be that is a Band-Aid for modernity, for the modern life? We're not going to go back in time. We're not going to go back to be hunter-gatherers. We live in this modern world, but our brains are really not good at it. There's tons of examples of this. So,
absolutely.
So we can use pot to kind of fit into the modern world.
Also because we have, you know, one of the biggest discoveries that has come out into the research is the endocannabinoid system, right? So in our body, we have these receptors, and cannabis has phytocannabinoids that actually bind with our receptors. Mm-hmm. And it ends up regulating a lot of our body. Mm-hmm. And so when you have CBD or you have THC, a lot of these things, when you're saying cannabis comes and helps, it actually helps regulate a lot of the activities that are happening.
Right. What do you say to the critics, though, who say that, just take a look at stoners, just take a look at people who smoke chronically all the time. They can't have a job. They don't have any money. They're, just give up. And let's be honest, that's part of the world.
Sure. Really? I mean, those are only the people that have. No, I agree with you on that. And, I think that's just one slice of the spectrum of people that are medicating, right? I mean, the people that we serve on the patient level, I mean, there are some highly successful people. There are people that are workers, or people, all across the band. I just think the stoner is kind of what you were talking about with the propaganda and what's going on. It's just one thing that we can look to and point to and say, ha-ha, like that isn't it.
Yeah. I can tell you, I've been inside tons of corporations all throughout America and around the world. I've been in, major TV networks, NBC, ABC, CBS, everything, Fox. And I'll say that I've seen people smoke pot or talk about smoking pot in nearly every single area. People making 6-7 figures a year. So it's not in any way going to diminish success. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do think, though, that the stoner, it's almost like a mascot. It's like they're such a visual reminder of that's what a pot user looks like. You don't look at that person on Wall Street that uses it to relax at the end of the day after a stressful day as a stoner,
Exactly.
But they use it every single day chronically, and they're more successful because of it.
I agree with that.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.